There is a very specific feeling that comes with buying a house.
Oh, absolutely.
It's this weird mix of excitement and just absolute terror. Like you sit at that massive mahogany conference table at the title company.
Signing your life away.
Right. Your hand literally starts cramping up because you've signed your name, I don't know, 80 times. And then you walk away with this 30-year sentence.
Yeah, 30-year sentence is a good way to put
It
it.
just feels so permanent. You kind of walk out thinking, okay, well, I guess this is my life now until I'm gray and retired.
It really does feel that way for most people. It's the ultimate set it and forget it bill. For the vast majority of homeowners, the mortgage is just this static, unmoving object in their financial life. You automate the payment. You try really hard not to look at how much of it is going toward interest.
Because that'll just depress you.
Exactly. You just let it ride.
It's like a really heavy piece of furniture that you just can't move. But today, we are going to try to move the furniture.
I like that. Let's move it.
We're doing a deep dive into a really fascinating guide from Jet Direct Mortgage. Specifically, this is their guide dated February 20, 2026. And the question on the table today is deceptively simple, which is, how often can you refinance your mortgage? And I have to be honest, before I read through the source material, I just assumed there was a hard rule.
Like a legal limit.
Yeah, like a three strikes and you're outlaw or something.
Most people do think that. It's totally intuitive to assume there's a strict limit on something that involves, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
But our mission for this deep dive is to shatter that myth completely. We're going to walk through the reality of the situation, which is that refinancing isn't a one-time event, or at least it doesn't have to be.
Where?
It's a tool. But like any power tool, if you use it wrong, or if you use it too often without knowing what you're doing, you're going to get hurt.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Let's start with the headline, the big reveal that honestly shocked me. So I'm a homeowner. I refinanced last year. Let's say rates dropped again today. Or maybe I just want some cash for a kitchen renovation. Is the government coming to stop me from doing it again?
No.
No.
No, and that is the first big aha moment here. There is absolutely no federal law that caps the number of times you can refinance a home.
Wow.
Theoretically, if you could find a lender willing to do the paperwork and the math worked out every single time, you could refinance every year. The law does not put a hard cap on the frequency.
Okay, theoretically is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence.
It is.
Because if there's no law against it and rates are, fluctuating all the time, why isn't everyone doing this constantly? Why aren't we all just day trading our mortgages like stocks?
Because while the law allows it, the regulations and just the sheer financial reality put up some very high fences. And this brings us to a concept that the Jet Direct guide highlights right up front. It's a term that sounds a bit agricultural, actually.
Yeah.
Churning.
Churning, like making butter.
Exactly like making butter.
But in finance, I'm guessing that's usually a dirty word, right?
It is a very dirty word. In the mortgage world, loan churning is considered straight-up predatory behavior.
Okay.
It's when a lender or a broker convinces a borrower to refinance repeatedly over a short period of time just to generate fee income for the lender.
Oh, I see.
The borrower doesn't actually gain anything. There are no real savings, no significantly better terms. They just lose their equity to pay all those transaction fees.
So the bank makes money on the closing costs, the origination fees, the processing, and the homeowner basically just resets their clock without actually getting ahead.
Precisely. It strips the equity right out of the home.
Yeah.
So to prevent this, the industry has built-in self-defense mechanisms.
Right.
They don't have a ban per se, but they have seasoning.
Ah, seasoning. I really like this term in the source material. It makes the loan sound like a cast iron skillet or a really good steak, or maybe a fine wine.
It's a surprisingly accurate metaphor, actually. Think of a new loan, like fresh concrete, or a bottle of wine you just laid down in the cellar. It needs to cure, it needs to settle.
Right.
Seasoning is the mandatory waiting period between when you close one loan and when you are actually allowed to open the next one. You can't just flip it immediately.
So even if I find a totally amazing rate, 2 weeks after I close, let's say the market just crashes and rates hit the absolute floor,
Yeah.
I might be stuck in the waiting room because my loan isn't seasoned yet.
You are absolutely stuck in the waiting room.
Yeah.
And this is where the details from the Jet Direct guide get really, really important because not all waiting rooms are the same size.
Okay, let's get into the specifics then.
Right. So they provide this matrix of timelines, and they vary wildly depending on whose money you're using and what kind of loan you have.
Let's break that matrix down because I think this is where people really get tripped up. If I'm just a standard homeowner, good credit, standard loan, what are we calling that in the industry? Conventional.
Yep, a conventional rate and term refinance. This is your vanilla option.
Vanilla, got it.
You aren't taking any cash out. You're just lowering your interest rate or maybe changing the term, like moving from a 30-year down to a 15-year mortgage.
Okay, and how long is the penalty box for that vanilla option?
It's the shortest. Often, it's anywhere from 0 to 6 months.
Zero. Wait, really? 0 months?
In some rare cases, yes. If the lender retains the loan and the math makes sense, conventional loans are by far the most flexible.
Wow.
They view the borrower as a rational actor. If you have the equity and you can pay the fees and it genuinely makes sense, they might let you do it quickly.
Okay.
But generally speaking, most lenders are still going to want to see 6 months of payments just to ensure the loan is stable and you aren't a flight risk.
So conventional is kind of the Wild West within reason, flexible, easygoing. But what about the government-backed stuff? FHA, VA, I assume Uncle Sam is a bit stricter with the paperwork and the timing.
Oh, much stricter. Let's look at FHA loans, the Federal Housing Administration. These are often for first-time buyers or folks with slightly lower credit scores.
Right.
Because the government is insuring the loan against default, they are rigid. The rule is specifically 210 days.
210 days. That's
oddly specific.
Very. Not 6 months, not a year. 210 days.
It correlates to making 6 full monthly payments plus the processing time.
Oh, okay.
They want to see a track record. You can't just sign the papers and ghost them. You have to prove you're actually paying the mortgage before they let you change the terms.
Makes sense. And what about veterans? VA loans are usually pitched as these great deals, often zero down. But does that come with more red tape when it comes to refinancing?
It comes with more protection, which sometimes feels like red tape.
Sure.
The VA is very sensitive to that churning we talked about earlier. Historically, veterans were heavily targeted by predatory lenders who would say, hey, refinance with us, just to steal their equity and fees.
That's terrible.
It is. So for a VA loan, the rule is strict. You must wait 210 days from the first payment due date. Any, you must have made 6 full consecutive monthly payments.
Oh, wow. So if you missed a payment in month 4, the whole clock resets.
Exactly. You have to show consistency. But there's another layer for VA loans that I think is just fascinating. It's called the net tangible benefit test.
The net tangible benefit. That sounds like a term from a legal thriller.
It's actually a mathematical shield. For a VA refinance to be approved, the lender has to prove on paper that the new loan is actually better for the veteran.
Okay.
It's not enough that the veteran wants to do it. The math has to literally show that the interest rate is lower, the payments are lower, and the costs of the refinancer are recouped within a specific time frame.
I actually love that. It's like having a financial bodyguard who just steps in and says, no, this deal sucks. You aren't signing it.
It really is. Okay. It completely removes the emotion and the sales pressure from the decision. If the math doesn't pass the test, the loan just doesn't happen.
Okay, so we've got conventional, which is flexible, FHA and VA, which are strict and protective. What about the people who aren't just changing their rate, but they actually want money out? The cash out refinance, I assume that's a different beast entirely.
Completely different risk profile. When you do a cash out refinance, you are increasing the total loan balance.
Right, because you're taking the equity.
Exactly. You're taking equity out of the house to buy a boat or pay college tuition, consolidate debt, or maybe renovate. Because the loan balance goes up, the risk to the lender goes up, you have less skin in the game after the transaction.
So the seasoning period is longer.
Significantly longer. Mm. Typically, you're looking at 6 to 12 months of seasoning, depending on the lender and the specific loan type.
Makes sense.
The bank wants to see that you've held the property and consistently paid the mortgage for a meaningful amount of time before they let you treat the house like an ATM. They need to know you weren't just using the house to launder money or strip assets and run.
That does make sense. It really feels like the loan types have distinct personalities.
They do.
Like, conventional is your chill friend who's up for whatever as long as you pay for dinner.
Right.
The FHA is the strict school principal checking your permanent record. And the cash out lender is like the skeptical bank manager from a 1920s movie squinting at you over his glasses asking for collateral.
That is a great way to visualize it. And that personality dictates your agility. If you're in government loan, you simply cannot move as fast as someone in a conventional loan, no matter what the broader market does.
Yeah.
You are legally bound by those seasoning clocks.
So we've established the can. You can refinance repeatedly, subject to these seasoning speed bumps. But the source material from JetDirect pivots pretty hard here. They move from can you to should you.
And this is the strategic pivot. Just because you have a hammer doesn't mean you should smash every window in your house.
Fair point.
The guide outlines strategic intent. You shouldn't refinance just because you got a shiny flyer in the mail saying rates dropped 0.2%. You should do it because a trigger event occurred in your life.
Let's talk about those triggers. The guide lists a few. The obvious one is saving money, but they go deeper than that, don't they?
They do. They talk about long-term housing plans. And honestly, this is the biggest variable people ignore.
Really?
Yeah. Let's say you have a 6% rate, and you can get a 5.5% rate today. That looks like a win on paper. But if you are planning to sell the house in 2 years to move for a job,
then the cost of getting a loan might actually be higher than the savings you'd get in those two short years.
Precisely. You'd be spending dollars to save pennies.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, if your plan changes, say you decided this starter home is actually your forever home, then paying a fee to lock in that lower rate for the next 20 years makes total sense. The strategy depends entirely on your timeline.
Another trigger they mentioned was household changes, which I assume means stuff like marriage, divorce, having kids.
Or income shifts. So as you get a massive promotion, your household income doubles. You might want to refinance, not to lower your monthly payment, but to actually shorten your term.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, refinance from a 30-year down to a 15-year. You pay more per month, but you completely kill the interest and own the home sooner.
Or the reverse, right. One partner loses a job, or you decide to start a business and suddenly cash flow is really tight. You refinance to extend the term back out to 30 years just to drop that monthly obligation.
Exactly right. That's using the mortgage as a liquidity tool. It's not just about the rate. It's asking the question, does this payment structure fit my life right now?
But here is where I get a little stuck. I'm looking at the numbers and I'm playing devil's advocate here. If I can lower my rate, even just a little bit, why shouldn't I just chase it? If I can save $50 a month, isn't that $50 in my pocket? Why is the expert advice saying wait or count the cost?
Because of the friction, the hidden friction. Refinancing is expensive. I think people often forget that it's technically a brand new real estate transaction. You aren't just editing a PDF at the bank.
We aren't just scratching out the old number and writing a new one in pen.
No, not at all. You are formally closing the old loan and opening a brand new one. That means you trigger the entire avalanche of fees all over again. The Jet Direct Guide lists them out, and it's a pretty sobering list.
Walk us through the bill. What am I actually paying for when I refinance?
First, you have lender fees. This covers underwriting, processing, and origination. That's essentially the cost of the bank's labor to verify your life all over again.
Okay.
Then you have third-party fees. You almost always need a new appraisal to prove the home's value hasn't crashed since you bought it.
And that's usually, what, $500 to $800 just for someone to come look at the house with a clipboard?
Exactly. Then you need a title search to ensure no new liens popped up. You need settlement agents to handle the actual closing.
And don't forget the government. They always want their cut.
The government always eats. You have recording fees to file the new deed of trust. You might have state mortgage taxes, depending on where you live. In places like New York or Florida, mortgage taxes can be significant, sometimes thousands of dollars. And then the prepaids.
Okay, explain prepaids, because that's the one that always confuses people on the closing disclosure. It always feels like you're paying double.
I get that a lot.
Yeah.
So your new lender needs to set up an escrow account for your property taxes and insurance. You have to front that money to fill the bucket. Now, technically, you do get a refund from your old lender for the escrow money they were holding, but there is a lag.
Right.
It can take weeks to get that check. So you have to come out of pocket or roll it into the new loan balance to start the new account today.
So when you add all this up, lender fees, title, appraisal, taxes, prepaids, what are we talking about in total?
Typically 2 to 5% of the total loan amount.
Wow.
Yeah. So on a $400,000 mortgage, that could be anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000 in closing costs.
Man. Okay. So suddenly saving $50 a month doesn't look so hard.
Exactly. You have to do the math. Mm-hmm. If you spend $10,000 to save $50 a month, it will take you 200 months to break even. That's almost 17 years.
That's crazy.
If you move in year 7 or you refinance again in year 5, you actually lost money on that transaction. You literally paid the bank for the privilege of saving a theoretical $50.
And that is the break-even calculation the guide emphasizes.
Yes. You have to be totally ruthless with that math. Total closing costs divided by monthly savings equals months to break even. If that number is longer than you plan to stay in the house, do not sign the papers.
It's funny because you see lenders constantly advertising no closing cost refinance, which sounds like a magic trick. But I assume there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Never a free lunch in banking. No closing cost usually just means we bumped up your interest rate slightly to cover the costs, or we rolled that 10 grand right into your new loan balance.
So you're still paying it.
You are still paying it. You just aren't writing a physical check today. You're financing the fee over 30 years, which means you're paying interest on the fee itself.
Which brings me to a distinction I really want to clear up. I hear people use the words refinance and modification interchangeably all the time. Like, oh, I need to modify my loan. But the source material has a very strict comparison table here. They are not the same thing, are they?
Not at all. They are basically opposites in terms of intent. Think of refinancing as a move of strength and modification as a move of necessity or survival.
Break that down for us.
Refinancing is market-based. You are going to the bank and saying, the market is better or my credit is better, so I am firing my old loan and hiring a new one.
Okay.
You have to fully requalify. You need to prove you have income and good credit. It's a proactive choice you make to improve your financial position.
So it's kind of like trading in your car. Because you want the new model with better gas mileage, you walk into the dealership with your head held high.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Loan modification is completely different. It keeps your existing loan intact, but changes the terms because you are in trouble. This is relief-focused.
Got it.
You go to the bank and say, I lost my job, I can't pay this. They might lower the rate or extend the term just to help you survive. You generally don't qualify for a modification in the traditional sense. You qualify by proving you are in a legitimate hardship.
That's a crucial distinction. Refinancing is proactive, modification is reactive.
And importantly, refinancing resets the loan timeline, which we will definitely touch on in a minute. Modification usually just adjusts the path you are currently on to make the monthly payment survivable.
Now, I want to circle back to the source of all this info for a second because context really matters.
Right.
We're pulling this from Jet Direct Mortgage, which is based in Bohemia, New York. And the insights are attributed to their COO, Peter Pescatore.
Right. And why that matters is that Pescatore isn't just a CEO who sits in meetings looking at high-level spreadsheets. His background includes over 26 years of experience in banking, and specifically as a direct endorsement underwriter.
Which is a fancy title for.
The person who actually has the authority to sign off on FHA loans on behalf of the government.
Oh.
It means he knows the absolute nuts and bolts of the risk assessment. So when the source says, wait for the seasoning period, it's coming from the guy who knows exactly why your loan would get rejected if you didn't wait. He's seen the denials firsthand.
The guide also mentions their Jet Direct mobile app. It's interesting how technology plays into this whole space now. It makes applying for a mortgage feel like, I don't know, ordering a pizza. You tap a few buttons on your screen, upload a PDF, and you're done.
It does, and that's kind of a double-edged sword. The app makes the application process incredibly fast. You can upload docs, check your status all from the phone. It removes the friction of the actual paperwork.
Right.
But, and this is key, technology cannot speed up the federal seasoning rules. The app might work at the speed of light, but the FHA still requires 210 days.
The app can't hack the law.
Correct. It simplifies the user experience beautifully, but it doesn't remove the regulatory barriers or the fundamental risk assessment the bank has to perform.
So bringing this all together, we started with the idea that a mortgage is a stone tablet. We've totally smashed that. It's actually pretty fluid.
It is very fluid. You can refinance as often as the math makes sense and the seasoning periods allow.
But we've also learned that can is a really dangerous word if you don't pair it with should.
That's the main takeaway. The 210-day rules for FHA and VA, the 6-month rules for cash out, they are there to stop you from churning yourself into poverty. And the closing costs are your reality check.
I want to leave you, the listener, with something to chew on, though. We talked about how refinancing resets the clock. You mentioned earlier that if you refinance a 30-year mortgage into a new 30-year mortgage, you basically go all the way back to year zero.
This is the ultimate trap, and this is the provocative thought I really want people to sit with today.
Yeah.
Let's say you buy a house at age 30. You get a standard 30-year mortgage. Your plan is to be debt-free by age 60, right?
Right. Big retirement party, burning the mortgage papers in the backyard, living free and clear.
But at age 35, you refinance just to get a lower rate. You take out a new 30-year loan. Now you're debt-free at 65.
Ooh.
Then at age 40, rates drop again, so you do it again. Now you're paying until you're 70. If you keep chasing the lower rate without looking at the term, you're effectively turning yourself into a permanent renter.
Wow. You're just renting from the bank at that point.
You are. You're keeping the monthly payment low, sure. But you aren't building equity at the speed you should be. You're paying mostly interest for decades. You might save $100 a month, but you just added 10 years of payments to the back end of your life.
That's a really heavy realization. It suggests that sometimes the quote-unquote smart financial move of lowering your rate is actually a massive trap if it destroys your timeline.
Exactly. Unless you refinance into a shorter term.
Right.
If you have 25 years left on your loan and you refinance into a 20-year loan, that's the real power move. You get the lower rate A&D, you keep your finish line, or you take the cash savings from the lower rate and pay it as extra principal every single month to stay on your original schedule.
That is the strategy right there. Don't just look at the monthly payment. Look at the graduation date.
Exactly. Manage the equity, not just the cash flow. The goal is to actually own the house, not just service the loan until you die.
Well, there you have it. Check your paperwork, see how seasoned your loan really is, and maybe do some real math on that break-even point before you jump at the very next rate drop.
Ideally, let it sit until it genuinely makes financial sense.
Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. We'll catch you on the next one.